Mr. Martin, reel 15. Now, we'd got to the point where you were on this reconnaissance mission and you'd come from the riverbed and across about 100 yards to this, was it a farmhouse or just a house?
Big stone house. Big stone house, not the farmhouse. It's quite a big house. And having got there, it was the back of the house that we were looking at. And there was a window, which was very convenient, it was open. So we went in through the window. Had a look around. Big stone bed house, it felt rather cold inside, although it was quite warm out. Had a look around, and we went very quietly to the room where the cables led in through the window. And that had obviously been used by the Germans as a communications centre. Cables were still there, but there was no equipment of any sort. With food all over, well, scraps of food all over the place, and newspapers, and it looked a right scruffy place. It really did. I was rather surprised that the Germans would have a place like that. I thought they were all very particular. They were very scruffy. However, we looked round and there was lots of easy chairs. It had been used as quite a big conference centre, I've had the look of it.
Officers?
I would imagine officers, yes. Yeah. Sort of, what you might call a communication centre. There's quite a lot of furniture there. However, we examined the place and there was nothing to see. We looked out through the front. There was a big open front door, big stone porch, staircase upstairs. Open door, we looked out, there was a big turning circle at the front and the pathway went onto the main road, which was to be our line of defence. So, well, this is one way out, and come round the house and get out onto the road. Right, I said, come on, let's get back now. Oh, and I left one chap by the river in case we should get clobbered, and then he could make his way back and inform the rest of them that we'd been either killed or captured. That's right, let's get moving. So we went pretty quickly across the open 100 yards. But just as we left the house, I heard the Nebelwerfer firing off. Nebelwerfer fired 6 rockets all at once. Whoop, whoop, whoop. And they landed, fortunately, about 100 yards to our right. They weren't on target. So I said, right, come on, double up. And we took a bit of a spurt on, we got to the river. The next lot landed, and they were a bit nearer the target, but we were in the river by then, so it didn't matter. And we hurried back to the squad and had quarters and reported on the situation.
Now, what did you report it was a feasible plan, and what did you think of the plan?
Well, I didn't like it, quite frankly, because the main objection I had was that once we got beyond that ravine, we were absolutely on our own. There'd be no support, no supplies, and I couldn't see us getting very far without a lot of backup. Now, I didn't like it, but then again, that wasn't my privilege to say so. That was my thought, that I didn't like it, and it would be impracticable. However, I went and reported back my findings on the situation to the squadron leader, who then reported to IHQ and eventually to the brigade. I waited then for orders, and we've got a meal ready about 3 in the late afternoon with the batteries. And usual call to see the squadron leader, and the attack would go in, pardon me, first light in the morning, and I would lead it. Which is another cheerful thought. He said, you've been there, you know the way. I said, yes, fair enough. So I thought, now next morning we'll see what happens. Well, evening came and it got very sultry and hot. And I felt that there might possibly be thunderstorms about. And my sergeant said to me, I said, sergeant, I don't like the idea of tomorrow morning, do you? He would say that again. He said, we'll be isolated if we get out there. I said, but there's always tonight, fingers crossed. And you know, in the mountains, it thundered and it stormed. And we were up at dawn, of course, we always had an early call, but then it got like that. We were up long before dawn. And just as we were getting organized, I said to the sergeant, I said, come let's have a look at that river. I think that would be more than 2 feet deep now. We went down and we could hear the sound of it actually. It was 6 feet deep. It was a torrent up in the mountains, like these storms, and being the mountains, all the little streams that fed this main river, you see. And we stood there and looked at it and laughed. He said, it takes a hand, doesn't it? I said, thank goodness, yes. So we were delighted. And we went back to our appropriate quarters, you see, waiting for the official word that it wasn't to take place. And a few minutes later, we were given the welcome information that the attack had been abandoned because we couldn't get through the river. So, although we'd enjoyed doing the job in the first instance, we weren't sorry that the operation was cancelled because I think we'd have lost a squadron and no real practical gain because there was no backup. So we didn't have any squadron there. However, the sequel to that occurred next night because we were staying there, you see, and I told you we got this sort of mess tent arrangement. And the squadron leader said, we're a bit short on mess furniture. Was anything in that house that we might justifiably liberate? Because the Germans that had it were liberating it. And I said, well, there's some settees and easy chairs there, and it wasn't too bad. He said, well, would you like to be detailed so we were going to pick them up this evening? I said, well, take a few lads with me, if you don't mind. So he said, yes, fair enough, take what you want. So, so I have a three-tonner, well, we set off at, last night with about 6 hours in the golf club, and we went off, put out the Tommy gun and a couple of grenades and so on, we all went armed, and we went over this bay bridge that the Royal Engineers had put on, and we checked with them that it would take a three-tonner, by the way, and they said, oh, it'll take a three-tonner, it'll be a bit rickety, but it'll take it. Rickety? We got on this thing and it swung left and right. It went up and down. I thought, when this thing loaded and we come back, hope it'll take the 3 tonner loaded. Well, we got across anyway. And as we were going along the road, suddenly a shadow came out of the tree at the side. Where are you going? Enemy territory up there. I said, yes, I know, we're just going to liberate a bit of furniture. You breathe at me, said, oh, sorry, sir. But, oh, well, you take your chance if you're going up there. And we're the last outpost on this side. It's all enemy territory in front of us. I said, we have to go by the house, which is unoccupied. I think we have to live with that. So, there was some. The London Rifle Brigade, actually, out of our monk battalion. So I said, all right, take your choice. I said, yes, I said, we'll be coming back in about half an hour. Don't shoot us when we come back. So I said, all right. So we went up to this house, we turned in the turning circle, left a couple of chapters of time going by the truck ready, and the rest of us went in, and we couldn't have the lights, of course, so we just had to feel it. There were no springs through. We picked up a few chairs and a settee, I think it was. I think only about three chairs in the city or something like that. I've brought them all out to the truck, pushed them in, set off back again. And true enough, the lads were there waiting for us, the London Rifle Brigade. He said, wish you good night, lad. And not shooting them. After we went back with these, and now Bridget was even worse going back again. It was a shocker. But we made it all right, and the stuff that we got was reasonable. It lasted while we wanted it.
Now, I'm not quite sure. So you could get to this place by road as well as by along the river, river as you had before?
Yes, we went over the Bailey Bridge. You see, we couldn't take a tank over the Bailey Bridge. That's why we had to go by the river.
Right, yeah, sorry. Yeah,
that's
just
all right.
Getting it clear in my head, yeah.
Yeah, we realised that the bridge was there, but it wasn't strong enough to take a tank. Actually, it's interesting, the Royal Engineers made it strong enough to take a tank by putting a pier from the ground right up underneath it eventually. Because that was the line of advance. And it was a very good piece of engineering by the Royal Military Engineers. It was really. From the base right up to the
now, we're now into November at this point. What's the next thing that happened then? Because I believe you became infantry. What was the background to this? Because it's quite an unusual thing for a tank regiment.
It is. Well, there's one point where I did a recce over the River Mescaler. And I'm wondering that if it was from this place, particular place. Oh, no, it wasn't. No, it was from one of the houses on Pendrola, that's right.
A bit later.
Yes, while we were here, we were informed that the regiment would be based near Florence for the winter. And now that, of course, was something that any soldier would be delighted about, that we were going to go back to Florence and be based there for the winter. But my sergeant said to me, he said, you know, there's a catch to this, and we're not going to sit with our feet on the table in Florence while the rats are up in the mountains. So he said, then we'll see what happens. Anyway, the plan was quite simple. There'd be no major action in tanks until springtime. The tanks were going to go back to Florence, outside Florence. We were in a place called Bagno, Italy. And these cooks and fitters would stay there with them. The fighting squadrons were going to revert to infantry, which didn't please everybody, as you can well imagine. And we then did as well as infantry, right through to the new year.
Nope. Where exactly were you acting? What was happening?
Well, we were up in the mountains near Penzola, up in the northern Apennines. We went by truck from Florence. Our base was in Bagnola Ripoli, where we occupied the village. The school was the regimental headquarters. The Villa Columbia was the officer's mess. And we left all the tanks and vehicles there, apart from the three tunnels, which took us up into the mountains, when it was the squadron's turn to be infantry. Now, we weren't all up there at once. It was squadron by squadron and troop by troop. And we all had different sectors. Now, we took everything back to Florence, and then a road was worked out. We would be taken up to start our infantry spell. We were not doing any major attacks because we were not infantry trained. We were tank troops. And let's face it, they couldn't afford to lose well-trained and battle-hardened tank troops doing infantry work because they'd have to be replaced by chaps who had no experience in the springtime. So we were not doing any major attacks. We would do minor patrols, and we would do static duty in that we would be stationed in farmhouses to repel attacks and patrols by German troops. That was what we were going to do. We would also have known as standing patrols out. Now, where a river like the Santerno was fordable, we'd have a standing patrol on the ford, so that any Italians crossing or German troops crossing.
I think we'll come on to now. Where was the first place you were based in a farm building? I think the first one seems to have been Casa Bafdosa.
Casa Bafdosa. That was the headquarters. That was the staging point from Florence. We went from Florence by three tunnel. We had a meal on the way because it was several hours journey to get there. We had a meal on the way, and then we got off. Not too far from Fontanelice, actually, where we crossed the river over an old footbridge and a pontoon bridge, and then we marched from there to Casa Bafdosa, which was quite a good march, maybe an hour and a half or so, with equipment and kit, and we were not used to it, remember. We used to being carried in tanks in comfort. Once my driver didn't mean that I feel naked like this without my tank. Anyway, we went to Casa Bafdosa, and from there we were given our orders as to which house we would be in. These were isolated. You've got to get a picture of the countryside first. You were in the foothills of the Apennines, and it was all little farms dotted around along footpaths, and they were all isolated, one here, one there, and there was Monte Penzola in the back, which was the main peak, and that was quite some distance away. Casa Uccellaria was one, Casa Carnipala was another one, Casa Budriola was another, Casa del Gesso. These were the farms, the names of the farms. I was in Carnipala, one of them.
Were they all ruined?
Yes, they'd been battered and shelled, and let's face it, they were very primitive to begin with, because there were no main roads near them. They were all tracks, and everything had to be carried by mule up there. And Exxon drivers who were used to gearboxes couldn't find a gearbox on a mule. It seemed to be full stop and start, usually, and dead slow. And that was the problem, you see. However, we were then, from Bafadosa, we were told which house we would be in. And as I say, they were crude to begin with, and they'd been battered around. There were no glass in any of them. They had sacking hung down over the windows, which you hung down in the deck to hide movement. But at night time, the sacking was lifted up and gun barrels rested on the sills of windows, or what was left of the sills, in case the enemy approached. Now, you would each given, each troop or four troops, you each had a farm to control, and you had a little patrol outside in a slip trench to warn of enemy coming, hidden, so that they could see enemy coming better than
that. Was that the standing patrol?
No, that was an observation patrol outside. Standing patrol, you went out onto a...
We'll come back to them. Sorry, I didn't mean...
That's all right. They were outside in case the enemy came to creep up on you, you see. They came in sort of daylight. They were only out there at night. You'd have that, and you would be in your house waiting for anything to happen. Daytime, you could sleep as long as you had somebody watching. Nighttime, everybody had to be up and awake and about and alert, with guns pointing out of the windows in case of visitors. We didn't have any. Other troops did. One troop had a German hand grenade with sticks on thrown in through the window. Chatfield didn't throw it out again, so the chaps outside got their own explosion. But that was just one incident. But we did do a few patrols, standing patrols. And things like
now, what would a standing patrol be like? Could you describe one?
Yes, a standing patrol, a river, there were some streams as well, and there were crossing places, which were obvious by the tracks that went down to them. Now, a standing patrol would be about six men, hidden in the undergrowth or whatever there was available near that crossing place, and anybody crossing was stopped. You would immediately see if it was a German patrol crossing. Now, if it was a German patrol, you'd fire at them. If it was Italians, a few on their own, one or two on their own, you would tell them to halt and interview them and see what they were doing there and why, and take them to your, or you'd send them with two men to the farm to be interrogated. That was the object of it, to see if there were spies that you'd come in behind the line to take information back to the Germans. So you've got to be a bit watchful there, and you've got to make sure that if they were your own men, you got the password. And they came up because of password for each day. And that was a standing patrol. I only did one of those while I was on duty, because the farms that we were in were away from the river on subsequent occasions.
What did you have to eat and you know, your general conditions of service up there?
Poor. It was really rough, it was. It was very rough. We had biscuits, and you'd have a tin of corned beef or a tin of beans, and you had them cold. There were no heating facilities, because you couldn't have smoke from the farm, you see. Otherwise, you get a mortar's rain on you. Although they probably knew that they were occupied, but they took it on the general view that there was nobody there, that there was no smoke. So it was pretty rough, actually. Toilet reverse slope behind the houses with the toilet area usually, and if you climbed up there at night in the dark, it was rather unfortunate because you didn't smell very sweet for the lift at the time you were there, unless you could wash your clothes. Matt did a fair amount of things.
I'll come back because I think that was a later one. One thing is, I think it was while you were at Canapella. Yes. There was an attack, and the guards were going to attack the Penzola peak, right. And then would you like to tell us what happened there?
Yes. We were warned that on a certain hour, the guards were going to attack and take Monte Penzola, because that peak dominated the whole of the area, and they could see from there all that went on over our area. So the guards were going to attack this. There was going to be a barrage put down before they attacked, and the barrage would be a creeping barrage in that it went up the hill as the guards advanced, or the mountain. The shells started just beyond the house that we were in Carnival. One shell, the gunners have a nickname called Bloody Gunners, and the reason for that apparently is that there's always one gun firing short. The gunners would argue, of course, it's not right. But this gun was firing 25 yards in front of our farm, and it lifted what few tiles there were and dropped them down again. And of course, we all got some sliding off. It wasn't waterproof anyway. But this gun always fired short. Every salvo, this gun was there. The barrage moved forward. Fortunately, this gun did too. And the guards attacked, and they had a hand-to-hand fight with the Germans on the peak. But that night, they took Monte Penzola. So it meant that you were not watched all the day long when daylight came from the peak of Penzola. And that was a great advantage. It meant also that we could go beyond Monte Penzola to the farms on the other side, to Del Gesso, which was another farm. And there was another river there for a standing patrol. Now, that meant that Penzola was in our hands. And that was just one of the houses that I was in. Another one was Canapala, Fusilaria. That was another spell up there. We did 5 days up there, and then back into Florence for about 10 days.
Now, one uniquely personal problem you had, but it's quite interesting, is that you broke your dentures.
Yes, that's right. That was it. I said we had biscuits, you see, and this was almost a stable diet. We had biscuits and beans and things like that, bully beef. There was no cooking, and I munching a biscuit one day, and I felt something go in my mouth, and I then felt crumbed under the denture plate, and I took the denture out, and it was just about split in two right along. Well, of course, you probably don't know it. You eat anything, your two ends are flapping up and down. You can't speak properly because your dentures are moving in your mouth, so you can't radio comfortably. And as far as eating anything, well, your whole mouth is sore as a result of it. So there's a place in Castel del Rio, which was a ruined village, which was the sort of local headquarters for all the service units in the area. And there was a dentist there, I found out. So I thought, I'll go and see him. So I managed on our journey back to pop in and see her. And I said, can you repair my dentures, please? And have a look at them. Well, what arm are you? I said, well, I'm a four tanks. Oh, no, he said, no, infantry only. I said, we're infantry on our feet. Although we're officially tanks, we're doing infantry work actually on our feet. No. I'll just check up so he gets his manuals out and looked in his manuals. No, he said, there's no provision for infantry, for armoured personnel. No, he said, infantry only, I'm sorry, but you'll have to put up with it. Well, thank you so much. I wasn't awfully polite, I'm afraid. So I put up with it, but when I got back to Florence, I met up in Florence with some doctors who'd been in the South African Army. Hospital in North Africa I met. Oh, we had a good chat to see him, talking about routine and regulations and so on. I said, you're a good case in point, I've just come back from the front with a broken denture, and they can't repair it. Can't repair it? Why? Well, it's infantry only. Oh, meet me tomorrow morning. Can you come in tomorrow morning? I said, yes, I think so. So I popped in next morning to Florence, and went to the South African Army Hospital, and asked for me, so I asked for him, can't remember his name. Took me to the dental department, showed them the denture. No problem, just leave it with us. I think it was about 2 or 3 days, I think maybe a couple of days, I can't remember. But they made a marvellous job of it. And it lasted for all the rest of the time. Just like that, no problem. But I had to laugh. Because we were army officially, although doing interview work, no regulations covered it. However,
so after this spell in the line, you pulled back to Bagno Aripoli.
Bagno Aripoli, yes.
And what about Christmas Day? Because you were there at Christmas,
we
I know.
Christmas Day, that was a bonus, actually.
That was just luck, I presume. That was just luck.
That was just luck, actually, yes. We were very fortunate. We've been up several times before, and we were back there for Christmas Day. That was one I day to remember, because Christmas Day is tradition in the army that the officers and sergeants wait on the men. And the cooks they'd been round the local farms and they'd got turkeys and things like that. And they'd made all sorts of goodies, geese, I think, as well. Farmers didn't mind selling, obviously. And we had the usual turkey meal with the potatoes and all the rest of it. And the officers served the men. And it was a jolly good do. It really was. It was most enjoyable. And the sergeant then came to the officers' mess to drink on the way back to their mess. And we got some Vin Santo, which looked like water. And it was very potent. It was quite strong. We got it from some of the local farms. You know, they grew a lot of their own, you see. And the sergeant said that we would show the officer a big test. That's a big glass of it, you see. Down in the front of showing the water they're giving us. And they would normally put it out in the stand. Fortunately, they got a truck there, so we took them home to the squadron. Mess. But we had a very good Christmas. I don't drink myself, but they're literally mainly. I made up what I wouldn't drink. And it was a jolly good Christmas, and they long remembered it. It was very pleasant indeed.
And then Boxing Day, still, there was a dance.
That's right, we organised a dance, because we were not going until the day after, I think, and we organised a dance. Well, there was, obviously, it was a village, and the chap knew a lot of the girls there, obviously, they got in touch with them, and it was Brett passed from one to the other. There was a dance in the school that night, and of course all the girls popped there and fell over there, and they had a marvellous time. It was very enjoyable, good. And the people were very friendly. Most of the chaps had got houses to go to. They knew the families, and it was like home from home. They were very, very pleasant indeed. Really enjoyed it. I knew a family called Matei. The family were doctors. The daughter was a senator in London. They had one lad who was killed from the university. The other captain, the German shot killed in one Italian man, and one of their son happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and he was shot. They had a daughter of about 13, I suppose, and she would speak in French out of English. They were Anglophiles, they loved the English people, and the mother and father could speak English, and the son was a doctor, he could speak English, and we'd often have a chat, and invite me up for a meal, and whatever sort of present.